You're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On today's show, Andrew Tarlow and his wife, Kate Hulling. He opened Diner Restaurant on New Year's Eve 1998 in Williamsburg. Has since gone on to open Marlow & Sons, Marlow & Daughters, Romans, Achilles Heel, Reynard at the White Hotel. Publishes Diner Journal. And on September 27th, he and Kate will release their first cookbook, Dinner at the Long Table. But before we get to that, guys, we have a special offer. I got to share something with you. We have teamed up with our friends at Sur La Table to launch online cooking classes straight from your favorite pages of the magazine. You'll learn how to make 7 BA tested and approved recipes in every session with step-by-step instruction. And you know what the best part is? Each class is on demand, which means you can stream it right into your kitchen whenever you want. Visit bonappetit.com/cookingclasses now to check out our Fast, Easy, Fresh and BA's Best series. And check back in a couple weeks for our Healthy-ish, Flavor Foundations, and the Party classes. But now, Andrew Tarlow and Kate Hulling. All right, so the book is Dinner at the Long Table.
Correct.
What's the elevator pitch for this book?
It's about bringing people together around a long table. It's about bringing the chefs to the home and bringing the community.
The chefs being your chefs.
Bringing the chefs in the restaurant and the community around us all together around a table. And how do you take what happens in the restaurants and translate that into home cooking? And then equally, parties that we've been doing at home for our kids.
What do you mean for your kids? Like kids' parties or?
No. So we have had a tradition that we have a adult party for each of our children. They all have a birthday meal. It all started with this epic meal for Elijah, who's our first boy.
How old is he now?
15. And the story goes that I was at a wine tasting that day, and Kate was 9 months, well, 8 months and 29 days exactly pregnant. She was due the next day.
Wait, so
you're, 29
so,
days.
So Kate is 8.5 months pregnant, and you're getting drunk during the day.
Not drunk, I'm spitting. So anyway, Kate wanted to make a lamb dinner. We were inspired by this lamb dinner in Lulu's book.
Like Domaine Tempier. She makes this like sacrificial spring lamb meal with lamb on a string, basted with cayenne
over
and
a
lemon
live fire.
And rosemary with a live fire. And then all those drippings fall on potatoes and artichokes and there's snap peas and there's mint. And behind the diner at that time, we had a wood-burning fireplace. And so we stayed there all day cooking. Andrew then did show up. And then, yeah, we brought everything down to our house and we invited a bunch of people over. Everybody came over. We ate this whole meal. Everybody was there till midnight. 12:30, I go to sleep, like finally put my totally swollen pregnant legs up. And then I went into labor at 5 a.m.
Oh, my God.
So then Elijah was born that day. And then we were at a birthing center and we could only stay there 12 hours. So I'm 22 and Andrew's 30 and we have like a, you know, 8 hour old baby. And we got in our car and Andrew's like, people are going to be coming over all day. Shouldn't we get some food? And I was like, you're right. We stopped by Sissy Salah.
Yeah.
And we got croissants.
The almond croissants there.
Totally. The best, if you come and see my baby, you're going to get a croissant. Yeah. So then we grabbed those. I remember
got champagne.
We got champagne.
I have had a baby and I have a wife.
And you didn't go shopping with
so you were like, people could just come over and see this eight-hour old baby?
Totally. And we went home and we made a big thing of bacon and eggs and the croissants.
I hope you didn't make the bacon and eggs.
I didn't.
Yeah, thank God.
I didn't.
No.
But people started coming, and I think what was interesting about our experience is that because there were very few kids in Brooklyn at that time, and they didn't know that when you go see a baby, you come, you say hi, you bring flowers, then you go. All of our friends came and stayed.
Like, dude, it's like New Year's Day.
It's a party.
It's New Year's Day. So we have 10 people, then we have 20 people, and by evening, we had 75 people.
No, you did not.
Our entire community had come, stayed, and were drunk on rosé and were smoking cigars. And then Caroline, the chef of our then of the diner.
Because also, if I may interject, like at this point, New York City, for the listener there, like New York City it's a city where a lot of people who live here are single and this and that, and they probably get married and have kids a little bit later than the rest of the country. So you were probably the couple, for a lot of these people, the first people they knew who ever had a baby before.
Yes.
It must have been like this almost this novelty.
That's the first baby
like,
they'd ever seen.
Whoa, you had a baby.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
Totally.
So they just, they came and stayed, and it was a party.
And then Caroline made pasta.
And Elijah wasn't even one day old yet. So yeah, so that basically, essentially, in many ways, that time really informed the cookbook. Because mm-hmm. in the end, we ended up doing that for all of our kids. So each of our kids, so Elijah's birth meal is the lamb dinner. Every year on April 3rd, we get our main community of people, which is usually about 24, 25 grown-ups, mm-hmm. who now sometimes happen to have kids.
Yep.
But for many years, excuse me, they didn't. And so we started doing this meal. And usually we start each meal by saying, like, I know you guys are all here and it's Elijah's birthday, but really this meal is for you because you're the ones who are supporting us and helping raise our kid and being a role model or an auntie or an uncle to our kids. So we kind of like have that same thing every year. And then each of them has their own meal. So you'll see in Dinner at the Long Table is all the recipes for that meal that I made in April 3rd, 2001.
I think this is incredibly sweet and incredibly appetizing, but do the kids also get their own kids' parties?
No.
No.
No. Wait.
No kids' parties.
Wait. All right. Okay.
So, yeah, people look at us and they say, you have four kids. How do you do that? Very, very strategically.
Marlon's birthday is in December. He's already been talking about his what the next birthday party will be for the next three months.
They're talking about Halloween and in June. I get that. That doesn't mean
how do you get that over that you let you can't invite your classmates over or something?
We really craft their view of the world, right? Kids
Apparently.
Are so their Jesus. Brains are so flexible and open.
They think it's their party.
Well, they think it's their party. They're psyched. It's all they've ever really known.
Oh,
and when they say, I want to have my friends over, I'm like, do you really want to? Your friends are going to all fight, and then everybody's going to want to play.
Who are you going to invite?
He's going to start playing with your Nerf gun, and you didn't want him to play with that Nerf gun.
And that's big.
Yeah.
Totally. Isn't it better to just invite adults? They bring you toys, and then they don't even want to play with them.
But now, like, are the other adults now starting to bring their own kids?
So there are kids now. So there is a little bit of a combo.
Well, I think the real difference is that Beatrice, Roman, and Paloma, the younger three, all their friends are showing up because our friends have kids those ages.
Yeah.
Elijah is still out of luck.
Yeah, he's just on his own. For these sort of parties / dinners, because this is always a question as a parent, it's like, do the kids sit at the table with the adults or do they eat earlier and then watch a movie? Do they have their own table? Or is this one of those sort of parties where it's not like a formal let's sit down to dinner? Or is the food kind of going the whole time and you can eat when you want? Or what's the flow?
So it's one table.
I think the main thing to say about our parties, so I can say that Andrew and I set it up and we cook, but all of our friends show up and they get jobs.
Everybody's involved.
It's like there's Andrew's in the backyard where we have all kinds of like wood-fired oven and grill contraptions. Yep. Andrew's got his team back there. We set up appetizers and oysters outside.
Does the city know about these contraptions and stuff?
No.
No.
Okay. No. So Andrew's got his crew. Then, like, you know, people will arrive. They'll head to the back. Everybody's slurping oysters and throwing shells, you know, on the ground because that's kind of the aesthetic of the backyard.
It's like the 1700s in downtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah. They become the gravel. Yeah.
We are in the midst of starting to ship our November Thanksgiving issue of Bon Appetit. And I think for the average person, like, doing Thanksgiving is a big lift and you have to learn how to delegate and, you know, pace stuff out and get into a rhythm. You guys seemingly throw like Thanksgiving like 20 times a year or something.
But we definitely do it 4 times a year at minimum.
Yes.
For all the birthdays.
And then there's real
and
Thanksgiving.
Then Christmas.
And then Christmas. And then there's Thanksgiving. And then.
What about your birthdays?
That goes in and out. We have done it.
But you know what we've been doing? We've been going out to Long Island for the past couple of years, and we've been inviting all of our friends, and we've been doing Bosam. Mm-hmm.
Bosam.
That's become your birthday meal the last 3 years.
Yeah, we did. No, so, two. Last two.
Wow. Everyone.
And that's so fun because we've got friends who are like bringing kimchi and making all the sauce. I mean, that's a great meal to get people together.
The last I was at Sambar for a friend's birthday a few years ago, friend Alex Wagner, and we were at the table and having such a good time, and the bosom there are so delicious, and you got the little lettuce cups, you got the oysters, you got all that stuff. And at some point, I literally had to get up and I said, I need to walk outside. I literally started
Stop eating this.
I started to get the meat sweats. I was sweating and I was like, I literally might not make it. And I just had to go outside into the cool air and just stand there for like 5 or 10 minutes. Because you can't stop eating it. No. It's just too good.
Every
and it's
single
so
bite.
Rich and fatty and crispy and juicy.
So the last time we made it, just last time, we bought such a big pork butt.
We always plan on doing pork tacos the next day.
We thought we'd have enough.
So we get masa, we're ready that we're going to make all this pork, and obviously it's flavor neutral. Yeah, yeah. And then we've got our salsas, and we ate all the pork.
How many people?
Not enough.
not as many as there should have been. As you'd want.
Okay, let me ask you this, because everyone loves a great dinner party, or for those people who do entertain, there is that magical moment where, you know, the candles are almost burned down, the wax is there, and there's empty bottles of wine, and there's that glow, and everyone's just kind of lounging about.
Yep.
And
fireplaces are nice in
that moment. Mm-hmm. But then there's those dinner parties now and then where you're like, why didn't that quite work? You ever had those where something just didn't click? Or do you guys not have that problem? Do you ever have the wrong mix of guests or something?
Well, the thing is we always have a core group of guests who know how to do a Tarlo dinner. Mm. So they're going to help us create, you know what I mean?
They kind of create the momentum and
they push it up the hill.
They're like, we know what we're doing here. We know that this, you know, pre-dinner where everyone is arriving, the room doesn't feel quite full enough. Yeah. And they're those people that we don't really know and they're socially awkward. Our world, we're such a community, such a group, and we've worked together in this way for so long that's like they've got our back. They're helping, you know, smooth out.
So you have those core guests and they have these satellite guests. And every now and then these satellite guests are brought into the core.
And they'll be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or they'll be like, we don't really know them that well. Here we are. Are we supposed to go in the backyard and eat oysters? Or should I be helping Kate? Or, you know, those people.
I'm not one of those persons. I'll just go in the backyard.
You're going to be
there. We know. I know. Yeah,
you're going to make it happen.
Let me ask you another question. How often do you invite some couple and there's 20 people there and afterwards like, yeah, I don't think we really need to invite them back.
They weren't quite right.
they just didn't quite work.
Yeah. We had some in Thanksgiving maybe.
Oh my God. They wouldn't leave.
Had that with I sometimes have a recurring dinner or something. You bring someone in who you know and you like, and yet they're like, they just didn't quite click with that crowd, or they didn't get in the rhythm of and it's not that you don't like them, it's not that you don't want to see them again, but you're like, something's wrong with the fit sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing about a dinner party. It's not necessarily the food or the beverages or the lighting, it's the chemistry and sort of calibrating it, you know?
Totally. And I think in those instances, sometimes less is more, right? For us, our number is 24, and that's really comfortable because we know that maybe 18 out of those 24, we can just count on them to make the magic. They're going to get up and dance when I put on my hip hop music that doesn't really fit. You know, like they know, you know, they know how to do it. But I think for normal people who, let's say, are bringing people together, having less people can be better.
All right. So how much has your home entertaining vibes and lessons influenced what you do at the restaurant, that diner? You now have that Airstream in the backyard where you essentially people can rent out to host dinner parties like yours, kind of, right?
The restaurants have influenced the dinner parties at home more than the other way around.
How so?
I mean, certainly I think there's a conviviality that is mimicked in both spaces. If you come to my house with 20 people, it's going to feel like as if I was working at the door at diner and welcome you in. I definitely think of the restaurants as home as much as I think of my home as home.
The only thing I will say is that when I met Andrew, he was living in a 6,000 square foot loft on the south side of Williamsburg, and there were four dudes. He had really good furniture, bathtub. I mean, imagine the dream loft in 1998 in the south side of Williamsburg. He had it with all these handsome 30-year-old artists.
No deep fryers, though.
No deep fryers. But it was so romantic, and they entertained all the time. Oh. It was – so I think as much as he's saying the restaurant influenced us, I'm going to disagree. I think that you guys – we lived in a loft at that time, and they always called it the house. You come to the house. They're always inviting people to come to the house, setting up really long dinners, cooking up on the roof, looking at the Williamsburg Bridge and all of Lower Manhattan. So I think you guys all kind of create, you and Mark, because it was before me, created that energy of that long table and inviting people, some that you knew, some that you didn't know.
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting point you bring up, and somewhat, like, I mean, to a lesser degree, what we do here at Bon Appetit, or when I worked at GQ for years, like that line between job slash profession and life and social is pretty blurry. And that you see it a lot in New York City, where people, like, they have these professional pursuits that are actually sort of recreational, and you know, it's weird. And so do you, in terms of the evolution of the restaurants, you and I were talking about Romans the other day. We were at a wedding this past weekend, and I was commenting how a lot of people on staff at Bon Appetit, certain editors, had been going to Romans a lot, and they were just saying in the last year or two, like Carla Music, our food director, and
who I saw in the park walking to school today.
Okay, and Matt Ducker at Epicurious, and our friend Allison Roman, like, just really loving Romans. And you said something interesting to me about eating at Romans and the frequency.
Oh, yeah. So eating at Romans, I think if you live in that neighborhood and you eat there more than once a week, or you eat there more than a certain amount of times in a month, I think you will start to see the ebb and flow of that menu and sort of Dave's intensity and pursuit of what he's trying to create on a daily basis there. And I think it does take that kind of, like, repeat guest to really feel it and understand it. And I think Matt moving to Fort Greene has made made his experience different than when he lived in Greenpoint, and he'd come twice a year, you know, as just a one-off.
Yeah, and then I think once you start, you know, even once or twice, then it's so addicting. It's like,
Dave,
I find
it
Romans,
a
you'll
certain
eat
vocabulary, right? And he's using a certain set of ingredients that you can feel that he's, like, playing with and toying with, not in a molecular way, but, like, in a very real way that feels really concrete. And you can see that tortellini move from a brodo to a dish with butter and sage. And how do those things change? And what happens when you add saffron to it? You know, and now it becomes this. And I think you really get...
So you're saying he's riffing as he goes, as opposed to having, like, finely tuned dishes that he's...
I mean, he's finely tuning those dishes, but they are morphing throughout the week and throughout the month.
And there's also, right, like, you'll go on Friday, you'll have that tortellini on brodo, and then the next day you want it again. But then... it's not there. It's now this other thing, which is even better. And I think that's part of, like, what you're explaining, is that feeling like you go and it's amazing, and then you want to have that experience again, but you can never have that experience again. But the next thing you're going to have, he's going to be kind of leading you on a journey.
Yeah,
it's like you're going down this path, and a very delicious path.
Before we let you go, guys, lightning round, though. We're doing a lightning round.
What does that mean?
Well, we ask you a bunch of either or questions.
Okay.
Okay.
As a team, or like, I
well,
get.
Well, summer
for me, summer for Kate.
You know, dinner for six, i.e., the family, or dinner for 25?
25.
25.
We love it. We're addicted.
Because you got the kids and all your friends.
Totally. All right. And they've like got that. Their own friends. And when their own friends are there, they don't fight.
Good point. I've learned that lesson.
Unless they're fighting over their friends.
Andrew, painting or cooking?
Wow, that's a tough one, huh?
Got to pick one.
God damn it. That's... oh, man. I guess I got to go painting.
Apparently, you got quite the hand.
I
haven't seen the paintings. I don't know.
When you come over.
All right, I'm coming over.
They're everywhere.
Okay, this is from the year you opened Diner. Brooklyn 1998 or Brooklyn
2016?
2016. Really? 1998. Ooh.
Can't live in the past.
You know what? I'm Manhattan 2016. I'm all about Manhattan right now.
Yeah. Come on. High five. Woo! Give it up.
Manhattan's where it's at.
Espresso or coffee?
Espresso.
How do you take it?
Just black.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
Oh, yeah. Just espresso black.
Straight shot.
Straight shot.
No sugar, no nothing.
No sugar, no nothing.
Kate?
Water.
Water.
I don't drink
Kate
coffee.
Doesn't drink coffee.
Tea?
No.
Wow. Fascinating.
I'm not caffeinated. All right.
Mignonette or cocktail sauce?
Mignonette.
Love shallots.
What do you do? Shallots, red wine, vinegar?
Black pepper.
Black pepper.
Yeah.
Do you ever get creative with like rice wine and cilantro or any of those sort of more sort of inventive mignonettes?
Lee does.
We don't. We have a chef who hates mignonette. So every time you go, he's going to try to take you another direction.
And that would be Lee DeRossier?
Yeah, mm-hmm. At Achilles' heel. He feels like the mignonette just totally overpowers the oyster. And
kind
that
of agree.
We need something that's...
Yeah, but it doesn't overpower as much as cocktail sauce.
That's right, I mean, you got to go plain also to kind of taste the silverness of it all.
Right, you have one plain.
You have one.
You always have one with no lemon, no nothing. And then you move on to
add... That's interesting. All right.
I want to taste the oyster.
Yeah, respect that. French fries, mayo or ketchup?
Mayo.
Stones or Beatles?
Stones.
Wow, Kate, like every day, like she has this, look, this pained look on her face for every answer you have.
She doesn't have an answer for that.
I listen to what my 15-year-old's listening to.
Okay.
Doesn't that sound crazy?
She listens to Panda.
It's funny. I was emailing my brother and my friend I grew up next door to. We email about dumb rock and roll stuff all the time. And I was listening to Rubber Soul yesterday on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the Beatles is you realize like half their songs are, I don't want to say complete nonsense, but songs like Michelle and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They're just these weird... Dopey,
corny, sort of poppy, corny, song. Corny pop songs.
But they're not even pop songs. Like, Michelle, my best. It's just like, it's not even, like, what is that?
They're just rhyming words.
Yeah, and Yellow Submarine. And it's just like, yeah. And then they'll have, yeah, some brilliant song. But it's like, as an album, they're tough sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm down on the Beatles right now. Andrew, rock climbing or biking?
I'd have to go biking.
Greens and eggs or the diner burger?
We eat so much of both.
Both those things all the time.
We eat so much salad and eggs, and we eat so, I mean.
I thought if you owned the diner, you were like, oh, yeah, I don't do burgers anymore. I've had way too many of them.
I eat Kate likes diner burger rare with cheese, no bun, sub salad. I eat that a couple times
so
a week.
Without the fries. Interesting. Do you do any?
No fries and no bun. Yeah. No, and so you can feel like that.
You feel good.
You feel so
good
after
that. But that's not a
burger.
That's just like, that's ground beef with salad. Yeah. That's different.
Mm, yeah, thank you. Do you do any sort of, with that, do you do any fixins, any mayo or mustard or ketchup?
Mayonnaise and ketchup.
Mayonnaise and ketchup, okay.
Yeah.
I love you to see my kids eat a burger like that without the bun, but they still use their hands if they're eating a burger. And then I'm like, no, you need a fork and knife. Like, burger is finger food. That's what I get back from my four-year-old. I'm like, like that. It's not so much finger food.
All right, final question. Olive oil or butter?
Olive oil.
Olive oil.
Easy.
Something you agreed on. That's good.
We definitely agree on that one.
That's easy.
Guys, thanks so much for coming by. Dinner at the Long Table.
So much fun.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank
you so much.
This podcast has been brought to you by Christina Che and Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli and additional help from Lily Sherman, Emma Wortsman, and Ashley Mason. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, right now we're offering an exclusive deal for you, our podcast listeners. You can get 50% off a one-year subscription to Bon Appetit magazine. That's just $6 for 12 issues. You'll also get our current issue plus an exclusive apron. Go to bonappetit.com/foodcast to subscribe.